In the matter of Gourmet Dining LLC versus Union Township and New Jersey Educational Facilities Authority, can we please have appearances of counsel?
Robert F. Bernard, Bernard D. Apollonio, on behalf of the Taxes District of Gourmet Township.
May it please the court, good morning. Justices David Wolf, on behalf of the law firm of Skoloff and Wolf, on behalf of King University and Gourmet Dining.
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Ritchie from Lowenstein Sandler on behalf of Public Universities, Amici, Rutgers, Montclair State, Rowan, Stockton, New Jersey Institute of Technology, and...
Et al.
One et al.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Renaud.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. I want to thank you for taking this case. For those few people who find tax appeals to be interesting, this is an interesting case. And I would also like to say that I believe that we asked for an uninterrupted period of time.
Yeah.
I've rethought that. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. So in this case, the court is going to decide whether a very expensive, Zagat-rated restaurant, which happens to be on the campus of Kane University, that is not a dining hall, that does not serve students on any meal plan that's offered by Kane University, is exempt from real property taxation. The easiest thing that I could do in this argument would be to say that Judge Novin, the tax court judge who initially decided this case, spent 3 years thinking about this summary judgment motion, which was originally filed in, I believe it was March of 2015, and was eventually decided after several oral arguments and after bringing in the New Jersey Educational Facilities Administration and is bringing in Kane University as parties in the case and then re-arguing it, gave a very thorough and comprehensive, and I would submit a well-reasoned opinion as to why the property is not tax exempt. And I would suggest that the Appellate Division decision did not get it right. So, having said that, I would like to make clear at the outset that although Kane University is a party and was brought in by Judge Novin, it is not Kane University which is being taxed. It is not the interest of Kane University which is being taxed. It is not the interest of the state of New Jersey which is being taxed or assessed. It is the interest of Gourmet Dining LLC, which is a for-profit limited liability company. No property of Kane has been taxed. Kane did not receive a tax bill, although in its more recent papers, Kane, after it became a party, started calling this restaurant Kane's Restaurant. Kane was not a party to this action originally, and as I said, hasn't been taxed. I would like to...
May I ask you a question related to that? You have an argument that by making this expensive Zagat rated restaurant tax-free, it's essentially an unfair situation for other restaurants that are competing with it because they have the burden of taxes as well. But when you look at this restaurant, It has imposed on it by virtue of its relationship with Kane and its contract with Kane financial burdens as well. For example, its share of the profits is limited to 12.5% of gross revenues. The share of the revenues is limited. Whereas another restaurant that's purely for profit has no limitation. If it does well, it reaps all of that profit. So, should we take into account the limitations that are on Gourmet Dining by virtue of its management agreement as we consider the fairness of imposing property taxes on it?
Well, One of the cases, which actually the Judge Novin cited, says where does the money go? And that's really where the determination is. And I would submit that in this case, the money goes to Gourmet Dining.
Well, some of the money,
a share, I believe it's 12.5% of the profit to Kane University. That is not unlike any number of leases, usually in shopping centers, but any number of leases that have a percentage rent.
I may be wrong. I thought that that Gourmet Dining got an annual management fee of $250,000, and it got 12.5% of the gross profits. Am
no,
I wrong
it,
about that?
No. Mm-hmm. It that's what it...
Is that true? Is that the arrangement?
No, that's what it pays.
It pays it to the foundation from direct revenue and also catering, correct? Isn't it two 12.5% slivers that are taken from it?
Yes.
Okay.
There's another, 12.5.
Essentially, the net revenue of that percentage then goes to Kane University.
It's a guaranteed donation for scholarships to the foundation.
It does.
Right. Mm-hmm. And should we consider that? That differentiates the restaurant from other restaurants that are purely operating the private sector.
It does, but the fact that a public entity, or the state, a county, a municipality, whatever, receives revenue from an occupier, whether under the Leasehold Taxing Act, Section 2.3, or under what I'll call the Catch-All Taxing Act 1.10, that has never been determined by any court, this court or any other court, to be a public purpose. Obviously, if all of the cases, one of the ones that occurs to me is, I think it's Munaki, where the Port Authority leased land at Teterboro Airport for the purpose of a warehouse. Well, obviously they're going to get the revenue, but that has been determined to be not a public purpose because it's not related.
It was a private commercial
to the purpose for which the Port Authority is formed.
Can you walk us through the statutes? Let's go through 3.3, 3.6, and 1.10, and tell us your view of how they apply in this situation.
Absolutely. 3.3. starts. This is the important thing, this is the part, frankly, that neither Kane nor Gourmet nor the Amici have indicated. It starts by saying, except as otherwise provided in this chapter. Mm-hmm. Well, in this chapter are 1.10 and 2.3. So those are exceptions to whatever it says in 3.3. So while 3.3 indicates that there is an exemption for the state, and even regardless of whether or not that public purpose portion, which Amici suggests that there's a semicolon and that makes a difference, but even putting that aside, it starts by saying, except as otherwise provided in the chapter. And those statutes, 2.3 and 1.10, those post-date the statute 3.3. And so clearly they, to coin a phrase, trump that provision of the statute. So
are you relying as well on some of the language in 3.3? And if so, tell us which part and whether it has a public interest component.
Yes, we're relying in part on the public purpose component, but even if the court does not find that applies, we submit that those other statutes do apply.
To the extent you're relying on 3.3, can you tell us which portions of the language of that statute you're relying on?
Certainly. The portion that we're relying on is the portion that says when used for a public purpose.
So
But the main portion is the except as otherwise provided. So in other words, it says the property of the state of New Jersey and the property of the respective counties.
Council, Chief, one of the numbers.
Well, you've got a lot of clauses in this language, and Amika
yes.
just highlighted this question, and that's why I just wanted you to tell us
right.
which clauses are you referring to?
The first part, which is except as otherwise provided in Article 1.
Understood, and we'll come
okay.
back to that later.
And then the used for public purposes, which is about, four lines down.
So that seems to relate to property of counties, municipalities, agencies, authorities, school districts, and so on. That's what you're relying on?
Yes. That's the question as to whether that semicolon mm-hmm. is a deliberate punctuation mark. One of the interesting things is the Amici have cited the laws of 1854, Chapter 113, as the origin of this statute. That particular law did not have a semicolon in. It's unclear. I can't find where in between 1854 and 1944 the semicolon came in. But our position would be that this court has always ruled that a public purpose is necessary and that not taxing property that does not serve a public purpose is unconstitutional.
And
you indicated that in the Holmdel case.
The Munaki versus Port Authority case is a perfect example because it doesn't fall within the category of state entities or entities listed in 3.3 that follow the semicolon, yet clearly the court imposed a public purpose requirement.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what I'm saying is all the cases have imposed a public purpose requirement. There is no case from this court or any other court that I know of that says that property of the state does not have a public purpose requirement, notwithstanding that semicolon in there as to whether that semicolon actually means something, as to whether that semicolon is different mm-hmm. from a comma. I recognize that it generally is, but all of the cases indicate that the public purpose requirement prevails at least partly because of the constitutional requirement.
Do you contend right. that if the semicolon really were a sharp break, the statute would be difficult to figure out?
It would, except that this court has ruled many times that the court is to construe statutes in a way that are constitutional, and this court has ruled that it's not constitutional to not tax certain properties simply because of how it is held. And here, again, we maintain that it's not Kane University anyway that's being taxed, or the state, mm-hmm. but it's the interest of Gourmet Dining LLC.
And does that position get bolstered by your reliance on 1.10 and how it was attempting to get around any loopholes associated
yes,
with
it? Yes, and there are cases, again, that there are the cases under 1.10 all make the analysis and then say, well, even if it's not a lease, it's taxable under this provision. So I think that's what the purpose of that statute is to make sure that interests, that private interest, private profit-making interests are taxed.
Do we know how well Gourmet Dining is doing? They obviously have the inside track for catering. They may be very willing to give 12.5% of their gross based upon their profits. That is if they are making profits. Do we have anything in the record to indicate how well they've made out under these terms?
The answer is there's nothing in the record that indicates one way or the other to the best of my recollection.
And is that a relevant consideration?
Not really, because it's not how well one does. I mean, if that were the case, then all these cases that I'm citing would turn on whether or not the entity which is doing the profit-making entity is doing well.
Well,
I don't believe
that's a factor.
They're attempting to make a profit.
If they were giving 50% of their gross for scholarships and breaking even, Would that change the analysis?
I would say no, because, I mean, at some point, I suppose you're going to, at some point, the, who makes the profit, I suppose.
And how much they're contributing to the university as opposed to how much they're putting in their pocket, no?
Well, in this case, they're putting
Because if they were making no profit at all, and basically turning their profits over to the university, would you still be making the argument that you are advancing?
I would, because the purpose of gourmet dining, as evidenced by its agreement, is to make a profit. So that's their purpose. The purpose of the enterprise from gourmet dining's point of view is to make a profit. That's why they are in business. And so that's the motivation of the interest of the profit-making entity.
So if they were putting $1 million plus into their pocket, wouldn't affect the argument?
No, it wouldn't affect the argument. Because as I said, the fact that there is, the fact that money is flowing to Kane University, whether it's a lot or a little, has never, never been determined by this court, or as I said, by any other court that I know of, any tax court or the appellate division, to be a reason in and of itself to determine that it's a public purpose.
For example, suppose Kane had leased the space to run a Tiffany store that would devote a certain percentage of its profit in payment for scholarships. Would that be any different than what we have here?
It's funny that you mention that, because that was exactly the argument that I made on summary judgment before Judge Novin. And I would say the answer is no. And what I was going to do was to give another example.
Reason I asked that question is because it suggests why it's important to tie the analysis between 3.3 to 3.6 as well. Because it's looking for the public purpose that's being advanced for the university or particular state entity, here happens to be university, whose purposes is being advanced by that leasehold or interest, whatever it is that is using the space that is otherwise government property.
Yes, and I would, here, this is what I would say in response to the appellate division's listing, and actually it's the same listing that the that the tax court gave of what the arguments are that Kane and Gourmet, is really what we're saying, gave for why it's a public purpose. Money, I submit that it's not. The composting idea, there's not enough.
Counselor, Gourmet provides services to Kane and other facilities. Do you know if they're being taxed also? And other campus facilities that are ostensibly for students?
No, they're not.
They're not being taxed?
I know they're not, yes.
Okay. And is that because they're not in Union Township, or is that because of they provide service for students as opposed to a gourmet service?
It's because they provide services for students and their dining halls, for example. And if none of the on-campus for-profit restaurants that are part of a dining plan, all of those are not taxed by Union Township.
This is not part of the dining plan, though.
This is not part of the dining plan. They have several dining plans. It's not one, obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, it's not one that you can just walk into. They also have two other items. One is called Cougar Dollars, and there's another one that the name of which escapes you right now, but which are basically preloaded credit cards that you can use on campus. During this time period, they didn't even accept those items. In other words, it's no different from a student's point of view than any other restaurant. One of the examples that I gave, and this would be to sort of follow up on Justice Lavecchia's question, is if the reasons that have been given as to why this should be tax exempt are accepted, there would be nothing to prevent Kane or any of Amici or any other state entity from, let's say, opening a shopping mall, for example. It would pay rent, they could pay money, might attract students. Students would probably love that. I have a shopping mall on campus. It could provide an alternate dining experience. They have a food court. All of the reasons that have been given. And then what happens to the shopping center that's down the street on Morris Avenue at the corner of Route 22? How do they compete with a shopping center which is paying no taxes? How do the stores, how do the restaurants in that shopping center that are paying taxes, how do they compete with the tax-exempt shopping center? And that, it may sound far-fetched, but if you were to accept the arguments that the state, that Amici have given, that there's no public purpose requirement, and that these reasons like getting revenue and making it attractive to students and having a different experience, if they're accepted, there's nothing that would distinguish what is being utilized here and that potential use. And you can think of all the different ones. The Tiffany's is a good example. You could have, you could say that this is a very prestigious. We could have an office building. We could bring in Microsoft. The students could work there. They could get internships, and it would be very prestigious. I mean, there's any number of things that the imagination could think of that would be nice to have on the campus, let's say, but don't serve a public purpose, as that's understood, and then would compete with regular profit-making landlords, retailers, office spaces, and so forth. The fact, and this is why I say that
Council,
the fact that
Council,
income is derived is not a reason.
Does Kane pay payments in lieu of taxes for the totality of their property to Union Township?
I believe not.
Okay. So there's no donation clause problem here under the state constitution.
I think I've covered everything that, frankly, that I had intended to say in one way or another, unless the court
Before you sit down, did you want to touch on that first clause and your references to 110 and 2.3?
Yes, absolutely. Those two clauses are essentially the bedrock of what this case is. So at pages 20, I believe it's 26 and 27 of our appellate division.
I'm sorry, I just want to make sure. We're dealing with the except as otherwise provided and what other clause?
We're now talking about the...
3.3?
No.
2.3
and 2.3 and 1.10.
And you're saying that pivots, the except as otherwise provided pivots to those other
Correct.
Sections. Just thank you.
So we concede, and we have always conceded, that even despite the fact that those sections do not specifically contain a public purpose exception, that if in fact there was some sort of a concession, a lease, whatever, for a public purpose, that the particular entity, in this case a university, was to perform, that the fact that it's leased or otherwise used would not render the property taxable. And there's a lot of examples. One of them was the golf course case, for example, that I believe that Gourmet cited. So for example, if DEP is authorized to have golf courses, and if the state owns property and the Department of Environmental Protection decides that it is going to either have a lease or a concession for someone to operate the golf course, that's a purpose that was specifically within, and that's a case that I believe that Gourmet cited, that if the purpose, the statutorily authorized purpose, is satisfied by a private entity providing that service, that is not going to eliminate the exemption nor make the property taxable. Here, however, what we're saying is that because this is not a dining hall, because it's not a restaurant that serves through the meal program, that it is not exempt. So the leasehold statute, I think, applies We have outlined, as I said, I think it was at pages 26 and 27 of our brief, how if you just change a couple of words, the effect is exactly the same, and it's a lease. And what we've also said is, even if it doesn't apply, even if you don't agree with that argument, it is perfectly clear that 1.10 does apply.
Thank you.
I did ask to reserve some time. I don't know whether I have any left, but I would like to have some in rebuttal if I might.
So I don't think you asked, and yes, you're welcome to come back.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Walsh.
Justices, good morning. May it please the court. David Wolf on behalf of Keene University and Gourmet Dining. Justices, the matter before you today, I submit to you, should not and must not become a close call. The appellate division's ruling is not a radical one. They ruled that Keene University, exempt from property tax, should not become subject to property tax when they open an on-campus restaurant to further their own purposes. Now, Union Township is attempting to argue that its vision of what a public purpose constitutes is not satisfied by what Keene University's Board of Trustees decided was a public purpose. But that's not the law. And what we also know what the law is.
What privity is there between the board and your entity? I thought your contract's with the foundation.
The contract is with the foundation, Justice. However, if we look at, and I'd be delighted to jump right into questions, as I know these are unusual
times. I'm
sorry,
I didn't realize you had
That's okay.
asked for 5 minutes.
And I'm happy to jump into the Leasehold Taxing Act because I believe that is
you
where.
You can save it and finish your presentation.
Okay. And we must also not allow townships or municipalities to circumvent the tax exemptions given to state entities and the state itself by taxing third parties when those third parties are using property to further the exempt entity's purposes. The only time that entities, third-party entities, have ever been found to be taxable is when they are furthering the purpose solely of the third party. Those are the examples you heard about today. Those are the examples that Union Township is relying on. And this has wide-reaching implications. This will determine whether and to what extent state institutions of higher education will be able to execute their statutorily authorized purposes, and I'd like to discuss what those authorized, statutorily authorized purposes are. And their authority is, right, whether they'll be able to enter into strategic decisions without having negative property tax consequences. And when we analyze these issues, we must recognize that the state property is exempt from taxation, that Keene property is the state property of New Jersey, and the legislature has said it is in the best interest of the state of New Jersey that Keene have a high degree of self-government and has given the Board of Trustees extensive authority to enter into contracts that they deem necessary or advisable or desirable for university purposes. And we have certifications in the record that were simply overlooked by the tax court or disregarded, that the university wanted to open up a restaurant open to the public to serve many of its goals, many of its purposes. When they built the New Jersey Center for Science, Technology, and Math, financed by tax-exempt bonds for the EFA, with the EFA always approved as part of that plan, as part of their overall campus, that they would have an on-campus public restaurant, and that that would enable them to help launch Keene as a visible, high-profile, state-of-the-art institution, that it would help them with faculty recruitment, development, and fundraising, which is key and essential to all universities as they compete in a modern landscape for education. They integrated it with their Center for Sustainability, and the students participated in composting pre and post and studied it in the lab. This is not a off-campus regular restaurant that Union Township keeps trying to make it into. Keene University decided for its purposes, it desired and it was advisable to have an on-campus restaurant. And when we examine these issues, we must heed this court's pronouncement that tax immunities for governmental entities should be liberally construed in favor of the government. And as the appellate division said, that it is not the role of the court to replace its judgment for that of the boards of trustees who are given broad authority by the legislature to implement and effectuate their services and their vision for the university in the best interest of the state and the citizens of the state. So when we look at the totality of these issues in that context, I would submit to you that the appellate division got it right, and this court should affirm the appellate division's decision, and that this property cannot be taxable to either Kane University under 3.3 or its management company, who manages all of its food service providers, who, by the way, is out of business and doesn't manage the restaurant anymore, which was not in the record, but Justice inquired.
So with that framework as a backdrop,
yes,
what are the limits to the university constructing facilities, managing facilities that it believes further its own purposes? You heard hypothetical about the Tiffany shop, about the mall. I was wondering about a high-end home furnishing shop that might enable students to furnish their dorm rooms and yet be open to the public. What limits are there?
So I would suggest to your honors that the framework for the analysis is the same. That you would start with, what is Kane statutorily authorized to do?
Okay, let's say Kane, following up on that, Chief, if I may, let's say Kane has a business major. I don't know if it does or it doesn't. It says, let's put a mall right on campus, because students should be able to see marketing in action. Shopping mall is a great New Jersey tradition. It's part of our heritage, yeah, as New Jerseyans, okay? Yeah. That's what we want, a mall. We're doing the mall. Everybody's tax-free. The management company's tax-free. They can reduce the rents accordingly to the tenants, and they put out of business the shopping mall that's around the corner in Union Township, which obviously has to pay property taxes. So, is that in or out of your analysis?
Well, that stays within my framework, okay, of analysis.
All right.
Right. My framework of analysis is,
all right,
did
assume,
the board
assume the board said we are. One of our great university objectives is to make students more familiar with shopping malls than they already are.
Then I believe this court would then serve as a guardrail.
Okay.
Right? Is
meaning,
that decision
meaning what? Meaning
beyond
what?
The fiduciary responsibility and obligations of the Board of Trustees, or is it so beyond the pale?
Okay. So,
is it so beyond the pale?
Which is it, under your analysis? Because we have to consider not only this case but future cases. And I will tell you, my major concern with this case is that this opens up an avenue to commerce that's tax-free simply by hooking up with the university in some manner. So hold your answer. Is my shopping mall example on the same page with gourmet dining in this situation? Is that within the
is it exempt?
Is it exempt? Thank you.
I would submit to you, it depends if it's integrated and to what extent with the university.
Assume.
And if
classes are being held about how to manage a mall. Kids can walk, can get jobs. Everybody's free to do it. The public can come in and spend their money.
And the students are working there, and
students
a certain percentage
can get,
of the profits are
jobs.
Going to support the university.
Students
I would submit to
jobs.
You that under this legislation, it depends. I mean, currently, just so we know, gourmet dining, there are no tenants. I would submit that it is a different endeavor, and I frankly haven't, and I would need to consider the question, Your Honor, but what we have here is we don't have the situation where gourmet dining went to the market and said, I would like to open, so who wants to open a high-scale restaurant? This is...
I want you to assume for me that all of the initiative comes from the university to put the mall on there.
But they would still be bringing
it's
in...
It's going to help. Students love malls. They it would help us recruit. Teachers love malls. It'll make the university better, we so say. Are we done? Are we
so
tax-free?
I think you would need to analyze in today's hyper-competitive education environment where they're engaged in amenities arms race trying to... I don't know the landscape well enough.
So it sounds like you're saying it could be.
It could be, and that would be an issue that you would need to examine.
Let's take something that's maybe even more realistic.
Sure.
Rutgers University owns a lot of land in New Brunswick. Familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay. What's to stop Rutgers, that has dormitories and all sorts of other buildings, from opening up a Wolfgang's, okay, with $140 bottles of wine, just like Gourmet Dining serves? Same circumstances, making a lot of money, restaurants right across the street, and then we can talk about all sorts of other types of shops, competing with the other merchants within downtown New Brunswick. And now Rutgers is going to be a tax haven for all of these profit-making companies.
I respectfully,
go ahead.
The hypothetical is not apples to apples. This is Keene University's restaurant. This is Gourmet Dining coming in as a manager to effectuate Keene's restaurant.
Same thing.
If Keene University
we won't call it a lease. We'll call it a management services agreement. Okay. Instead of the lease, the management service will be $250,000 a year, 12.5%, and let's say, and I'm just using Wolfgang's. It could be any. They're making millions. And yet, they're not paying taxes, so they're doing a whole lot better than the restaurant right across the street.
There is no reason that a university would be precluded from bringing any restaurateur that it wants onto its campus for its students.
But we're talking about taxation. We're not talking about allowing or not allowing.
But if we look at the leasehold taxing
Are the students paying the $140 bottle of wine?
Absolutely. And we know for a fact that the students frequented this restaurant, and they frequented it with their parents, and they've used it to recruit faculty and fundraising. And ultimately, the Board of Trustees decided that out of all of their meal plans, right, out of all of their offerings, high-end, low-end, they wanted to offer a full range of options.
You don't think that if your argument prevails here, that these universities like Rutgers and many others are going to be a magnet for private companies, restaurants, to park themselves in the buildings in order to obtain tax-exempt status and preferred status with the university by catering?
They're already there, Judge, Your Honor. Starbucks are on campus. Many, many for-profit entities are throughout all of these universities.
Is Starbucks exempt from
yes.
taxes? Starbucks is exempt
100%.
From taxes?
Absolutely, on campuses throughout New Jersey. The only difference here apparent appears to be.
Well, should they be?
But that's you, the
you
analysis.
You talk us
that's
out, oh,
the
that's
analysis
the
from hospitals having meal service entities on the hospital premises or in educational facilities. So people visiting those entities have a place for meals, for coffee, beverages, stuff like that. I mean, all of that has been analyzed before for public purpose. Never before has there been a case where a high-end New York competitive restaurant had to be brought onto a campus grounds to fulfill some college mission.
I agree that this case is novel with respect to the extent that it is expensive, but what we're discussing is an on-campus restaurant. Universities throughout this country are experimenting with uses that we can't even begin to imagine.
So I want to see if you stand by something that I think I heard you say and give you a chance to rephrase it otherwise.
Sure.
No limit on a university bringing in any restaurant. Is that your position?
I would submit it depends on potentially the structure of the agreement, the motivation of the Board of Trustees. If we look at the,
Justice,
I'd like to just cite to you And if we look at the Homedale case, if we look at what this court has said, what constitutes public purpose, this court has said public purpose equals statutorily authorized. Public purpose equals statutorily authorized. That's what it means. The legislature has deemed it within the public purpose. It is publicly.
It doesn't mean that the university can do whatever it wants to do and that there's no oversight by courts. And the other purpose here is for municipalities, I'll use New Brunswick, to be able to support the services that it provides to its residents in terms of police, fire, first aid, all the rest, garbage collection, and the more money that's taken out of their coffers and that goes into profit-making companies that are parking themselves in universities, the less there's going to be for those essential services. No, that's the other side of the argument.
It is the other side of the argument, Justice. However, the state has deemed these properties should be exempt. And the state has also, and this court has said, as long as the private entity is performing the purpose of the exempt entity. The only cases, and if I could just reference them for a minute, the Munaki case, which we heard about, is when the private entity was building windows and et cetera, totally unrelated to the airport. Right? The other example is the Todd Shipyard case, where there was a private shipyard building and repairing ships for itself. There's never been a case that has said when you bring in a private third party to do something that you could do yourself, that you could do it, that somehow was beyond the public purpose. As long as the legislature has given the authority to its entity to effectuate that purpose, it is a public purpose. And the Board of Trustees here, they don't only have general authority.
There's no review of the public purpose once the entity decides that it is for a public purpose? Is that your position?
That is not exactly what I'm saying.
What exactly are you saying then?
They have the Board of Trustees has the power to enter into contracts which they deem necessary or advisable. And the question here is, did they do that?
Well, how about 3.6 as a limitation? Doesn't 3.6 anticipate this type of scenario? Look, college buildings are exempt, except if you bring something in for profit-making organizations which are not otherwise exempt.
Justice, respectfully, this is a 3.3 case. This is Keene property is property of the state of New Jersey, and it has to be analyzed under 3.3.
Okay.
There is the only test under 3.3 is whether it is satisfied. If there is any use requirement.
If we consider it a lease, is it 3.6 apply then?
No.
Why not?
Absolutely not, because it's 3.6. 3.3 has, that only
if
applies to 3.6.
If we consider this a lease as
correct.
Opposed to an agreement, does 3.6 come into play then?
Only if you conclude that it's somehow taxable, not under 3.3. 3.3 applies to property of the state.
I understand, but even 3.6, which is talking about, you know, colleges and schools, you know, colleges have a public purpose. We know that. Schools have a public purpose. Built into that statute is the public purpose from 3.3. No?
No, so under 3.3.
That's one of the reasons why colleges are exempt is because we know that colleges serve a public purpose.
Correct, but under 3.6, if you lease property to a for-profit entity, you tax that portion. Under 3.3, if you bring in a for-profit entity, because we've said if you're going to accomplish a state good that you could otherwise accomplish that is for the public good, we are not going to encumber that decision under 3.3 with negative tax consequences. That's what this court said at Holmdel. That's what this court has said repeatedly. And I can give you, I mean, the examples of what is taxable or what has been found not taxable is extraordinary.
How about throw into it 1.10?
So let's talk about 1.10. And the examples, because we've been very stuck, I feel, on the fact that this is expensive, right? 1.10, courts have determined that the county park, which just says essentially you've got to maintain a county park, they open riding stables, right, which only applies to probably a small segment of the population. Marinas, which only a small segment of the population likely has boats, the court said, that doesn't matter. And it was a very broad statute, basically, that said maintain the park. They opened a marina. Not taxable under 1.10, even though those companies were making a profit, because that was consistent with their statutory authorized purpose. The golf course, the county, a milk bar, right, an ice cream stand, where they brought in a for-profit operator into a park, they said, it's okay, because that's, even though it was just a broad statute that said maintain the park, much less than specific here, we have specific statutory authority that says we can enter into management agreements for food services. For food services. These general statutes just said maintain a park. Right? We have the legislature saying we want you to go out, we contemplate that you're going to go out and engage third-party providers for food services. Right? The only objection...
I'm still waiting. for you to address 1.10.
Those are all 1.10 cases. Those are 1.10 cases.
Let's look at the language. When real property, which is exempt from taxation, that would be Kane University, okay, is used by a private party in connection with an activity conducted for profit, and the use does not render the real property taxable or otherwise, it shall be assessed and taxed as real property of the private party.
I would love to address it.
Go ahead, please.
So, two issues under 1.10. The first is it only applies when the leasing of the property does not make the real estate taxable.
Well, you're claiming there's no lease.
Well, or the same thing for 1.10. I agree that here.
You're saying that condition's met.
Well,
right?
There's no lease here. I still have not heard how you could try to convert a tax on a non-existing leasehold.
Okay, but your contention is there's no lease. So you've got two conditions.
There's
you're about
no
to go
lease.
To the second one. The first obviously doesn't apply according to your position.
Correct. But
What's
there are two statutes. There are two statutes. 1.1 okay. And leasehold tax again and 1.1.
Okay.
They both have the same concept that if the use of the property invalidates the exemption, which is kind of what we're hearing today.
But let me pause you because I interrupted you. You said if a lease converts it to taxable for other reasons, that doesn't apply. What was the second thing you were going to say is a condition of 1.10 applying?
So that is the first condition. The second, which this court has developed, is that if it's used for the purpose of the exempt entity, the leasehold tax doesn't apply. So if I can address both of those statements. The first statement, which the township is arguing that this is not an exempt or public purpose. Well, on its face, the Leasehold Taxing Act doesn't apply. And if you look at Collingswood, Martin versus Collingswood, this court said, if the argument is that it's not a public purpose, the Leasehold Taxing Act can't apply because it says that it only applies when the leasing doesn't make it taxable. Right? If the argument is that this somehow invalidates the exemption, then the Leasehold Act doesn't apply, period, full stop, end of the analysis.
I'm sorry. It says if used for purposes of in this case, the college, it's exempt from 1.10. That's what you're saying?
If Union Township's argument is that the use of this property is outside of the college purposes, then the leasing of and that there is a use requirement, then the leasing of this property would invalidate the exemption, right, which they didn't tax Keene, then the Leasehold Taxing Act can't apply. And that's exactly what Martin versus Collingswood said. That's point number one. Point number two is that if the leasing taxing act applies, there are two lines of cases. The first is this case that I just discussed, Martin versus Collingswood, and the second is Todd versus Shipyard. In Martin versus Collingswood, this court said that the legislature intended the use of property for the public purpose not be burdened with taxation, and that it's dispositive here that the commission furnished the public use simply by a method that the legislature authorized.
Let me ask you a question. If we cut out the 12.5% that is going to the university for scholarships, is gourmet dining still in?
Is gourmet dining still exempt?
Yeah, is it still a public purpose?
Absolutely. This is not just about generating revenue.
I'm trying to understand the scope of your argument. So
sorry, Justin.
You're saying that the scholarships are not an antecedent to your argument. Doesn't make a difference.
Oh, it's all
correct. I think that's what you said.
I am saying that the university chose to open this for a multitude of reasons. One of which was to support its foundation. 12% of the total scholarships that the university has generated since this was opened was supported.
I understand, but you're saying that is not sine qua non. That if no money was going back for scholarships, you'd be making the same arguments to us, correct?
Absolutely. If the university chose, for a multitude of reasons, let's say they didn't have a university club and they decided this was the best way to bring donors onto campus, to entertain our prospective faculty members, to recruit students. The university has the right and the ability to set up its overall campus structure, high end, low end, and that's what this court said.
Does it make a difference if students are not employed? So we'll take away the 12.5% in scholarships, and only like 5% of the students are employed there. Still same argument?
Justice, my argument would be the same, but you keep chipping away actual facts in this case, which I understand
I want to see how far this goes.
But I believe, and what the appellate division said, is when you look at the totality of the purposes that Keene actually adopted this restaurant, right, which were all statutorily authorized, this should not be that close call. But this, we're talking about an on-campus restaurant. It just happens to be expensive, which all of the other courts that have looked at it said that's not the determinative factor. We look at it as an overall complexity. If we look at the Todd Shipyard case or the Munafi case, the reasons those were subject to the Leasehold Taxing Act was because they had nothing to do with the exempt entity. Nothing, right? The shipyard wasn't building or protecting ships or making ships for the federal government. It was for themselves, right? Munafi, they were making windows and doors to sell into private commerce, not for the airport.
But the connection that you say makes that case different from Munafi and the shipyard case is defined by the Board of Trustees of Kane. So the Board of Trustees of Kane can say, and by that I'm going back to the idea that principals of this case could either close or open a door, many doors. The trustees can say obviously anything they want, and the trustees can say, I don't mean insincerely, perhaps sincerely, that the following for-profit entities we consider to be part of our educational mission, because students can compost, go to the mall, observe consumer behavior, whatever it may be. So do you see the issue there?
I see the issue, and what I would suggest is that the Board of Trustees deserves a high degree of deference.
But you accept that at some point, the connection between the university's public purpose and the activity provided by the entity are so separated that they might not be tax exempt. You accept that fact, right?
I believe that is possible, Justice. I believe that is certainly not the case here. And what I would suggest is if you look at
the university, okay, go ahead, continue.
I would never want to interrupt you, Justice.
No, I'm trying to think of a purpose. The university could be, they lease property to build ships by a private entity that's building ships, and Keene doesn't have a shipbuilding department and doesn't have they do have an engineering department, but I mean, at some point you acknowledge that the Board of Trustees may go so far in trying to make money for the university and maybe diminish the tuition fees that it just may not make it as a tax exempt entity.
I agree, which is why I think that the courts have said there is not only do we liberally construe right, tax immunities in favor of the government, but that we should give a broad deference to the boards of trustees. And it's not just me saying it, although I think I'm hopefully persuasive today, but right, we know that the legislature has said it's in the best interest of the state that state colleges shall be and continue to be given a high degree of self-government, and that the decentralization of authority and decision-making to the boards of trustees and administrators enhances that self-government.
You're saying
that statute goes back a long way to when the state largely deregulated a lot of activities for higher education. So that general statement has to be understood in context. Tell me how it is in the interests of a public university to have chosen to dedicate, I think it's 10 or 11% of the space of this publicly funded building for STEM research and study by its students and faculty, and turn it over to a high-end restaurant. How does that further the interests of the public university to have dedicated that space in that fashion?
Justice, they're still operating that business without Gourmet. They didn't turn it over to anyone. It's Keene's restaurant.
Governor, not the university made the argument that having a high-end restaurant raises the public profile of the university.
100%.
Tell me how that happens.
Because by bringing people onto the university, by attracting people to Keene, to see that Keene is a forward-thinking, state-of-the-art college.
Come to our restaurant and see that we're a great university.
Come and see this beautiful, amazing, vibrant campus, and maybe you'll support the campus, you'll consider sending your kids to the campus, maybe you'll enroll in the campus. That's what the Board of Trustees decided. Maybe you'll be willing to come and teach
and chose
at our
to
campus.
Do it because it had a Zagat-rated restaurant on its premises, on a newly constructed building with taxpayer money.
Justice, they decided that a restaurant open to the public would serve many of their purposes. Absolutely.
It's difficult to see any principled limits to that argument as you framed it so articulately, and that's what I'm struggling with.
I recognize that, and that's why I suggested that you should, a broad deferential standard does make sense, but what we're discussing is an on-campus restaurant. We're not talking about starting a mall. We're not talking about Tiffany's, which is a on its own retail entity. Ursino doesn't exist, right? The Gourmet Dining didn't come and say, I want to open up a fancy restaurant. Keene University said, what we would like to do for our purposes is to have a restaurant, period. Gourmet Dining, would you operate it for us? Would you do it? And Gourmet Dining was willing to do it.
I think we have your argument. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ritchie.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. TCNJ, that's the sixth university that's in our Amici group. Apologies for missing that on my introduction. We're coming at this case on behalf of Amici from a little bit different direction. Our starting out point is that under Section 3.3, there is no public purpose requirement for property of the state. And that's the whole semicolon argument that was referred to early on in the argument. And we believe that this court has endorsed that semicolon argument, just as the nuns in grammar school did when I was coming through grammar school, that if you have a modifying phrase after the semicolon, it does not modify a subject before the semicolon.
So what is the limit on the statute?
So what does it mean? I've been listening to the colloquy that's been going on here, and I think for the most part we would endorse the arguments made by counsel for Keene and Gourmet Dining. Responding to one of the justices' questions, I do think that there is always going to be a role for court oversight on these issues.
Okay, but let me just ask it more specifically.
Sure.
If that semicolon is a hard break,
right,
and there is no public requirement on anything after it,
right,
what does the statute limit?
Well, then you have to go back to 2.3 or 1.10. And as counsel was indicated, the public purpose requirement effectively gets imported into those two provisions, so that you're still going to be able to do the inquiry, but I would like to turn it around a little bit. Our argument is that if it's property of the state, if it's property of the university, and it's not operated by a third party for-profit entity, then it is, in fact, exempt without that kind of analysis.
So 3.3 represents, if you're not in the category that precedes the semicolon, there's no public purpose requirement, and all of that is exempt unless the other provisions apply.
Yes, Your Honor. And a good example of that is the Stoddard case that was decided by the tax court. In that case, we were dealing with graduate student housing that Rutgers had put up in Piscataway. And a taxpayer in Piscataway challenged the tax exemption for that property. Now, this graduate student housing was owned by Rutgers. It was operated by Rutgers. But it wasn't the typical dormitory. It was apartments, they had kitchens, they were multiple bedrooms. It was for families. And the taxpayer in that case made many of the arguments that Union Township is making here, that this was actually this was in competition with market housing. This was in fact putting the local landlords at a disadvantage. And our argument in that, and we argued in that case that A, there was no public purpose and so it didn't matter, and B, that even if there was a public purpose, then of course graduate student housing met that purpose.
Went to a core function of a university to provide housing for
students. Exactly.
Students.
But, Your Honor, the point that I would like to make here is that we as public universities in the state of New Jersey do not want to fight that battle every time we come up with a new, novel, forward-looking use. And my starting out point in this argument is that if the property is owned by the university, if it is operated by the university, and it is a state university and therefore property of the state, that property is tax exempt under 3.3, period, full stop. So
do
in
you
this
agree,
case,
do you agree with the analysis that it's not the ownership that is controlling the determination, but it's the use?
I do not agree with that analysis as it's set forth in cases like Holmdale and Munaki and Washington Township.
Why not Munaki, since that was Port Authority property, that was state property?
Well, but Munaki was not a 3.3 case. The tax exemption that was under consideration in Munaki was under the Port Authority Airport Terminals Act. And the exemption in that case specifically said it only applied if the property was being used for terminal purposes. And so there was in
that. So there was a more refined analysis, but you agree, though, there had to be a connection to a core purpose.
Because the statute specifically limited the exemption to that core purpose, unlike Section 3.3, which in our interpretation of it, for property of the state, does not include a core purpose.
I'm trying to, I just want to understand the full scope of your argument. So I've given the Rutgers example because they own a lot of property in
New Brunswick,
and they have dormitories there.
Yes.
So if the first floor of these buildings are all for commercial properties, restaurants, clothing stores, other types of merchants, all tax exempt under your analysis?
I think that it would be a two-step analysis. So if it is property owned by the state, it would be tax exempt under 3.3. If in fact the property was leased or operated by a for-profit entity, then you have to look at 1.10 and 2.3.
No, they did. So they just do it in terms of a management. In order to give cover, they have a management services agreement, just as they have over here. All of these commercial establishments are going to be tax exempt?
I think even under a management type agreement, you would still have to look at it under 1.10 to the extent that the management companies were private entities engaged in for-profit activities. I'm not taking the position that we can just run away from 1.10. I think that in any situation where the property is owned by the university but operated by a private profit-making entity, you do have to analyze the use under 1.10 to determine if it is within the public purpose or statutory authority of the university.
So in a case like this, instead of an upscale restaurant like Gourmet Dining, you had a world-renowned sushi chef, and the cheapest item on the menu was $600, and it served all the purposes that we've heard about, attracting individuals, elevating the profile, et cetera. Tax exempt?
The chef a employee of the university or employee
same,
of a private?
Same arrangement that we have here.
Same arrangement we have here? I think you would have to look at it under 1.10. And if the tax court, for instance, engaged in a factual inquiry and determined that in fact this high-end Japanese restaurant was in furtherance of the university's purpose and the university's mission, then yes, I think that it would be tax exempt. And I concur with Mr. Wolf that the amount that they charge is really not the controlling interest.
So all that a university would then have to do is add a provision to statement somehow under its bylaws that said part of our mission is to encourage people to eat sushi and compost unused sushi and expose students to sushi. That's all they need.
Well, I understand the concern that the court is expressing in this regard, and the only thing I can say is that concern really needs to be a factual analysis that is done initially at the trial court level.
But we are being advised we should pay a lot of deference to what the Board of Trustees says it is. This is not only publicly financed building that we're talking about, but we're talking about taking tax revenues away from the citizens of Union Township, thereby at least theoretically increasing their tax burden.
Yes.
Issues going on here.
Well, and that exists, Your Honor, regardless of whether it's a high-end sushi restaurant or a bookstore or any other number of businesses that a university needs that also operate in competition with private industry, including dormitories. I mean, kids can live in the dormitories more cheaply than they can live in private housing. So does that mean that the dormitories are no longer tax exempt?
But you do see the contrast.
I do.
Dormitories and at least arguably a university bookstore, when those dinosaurs actually existed back in the day, are fairly well integrated. A bookstore has the curriculum and the books that a student needs, et cetera, provided by the university. We're talking here about a restaurant that could be perfectly, it might so happen that students absolutely do not use it. And they're not have to use it, they're not encouraged, you know, they don't use it. It could be entirely funded by public patrons.
And that would be the kind of searching inquiry that I think a court would have to perform in order to evaluate whether the claim that this high-end sushi restaurant that a student never used and never will use, in fact, falls within the university's purpose and mission. I mean, that's clearly not this case, but that case could happen. Same with the shopping mall. I mean, certainly I could understand how a university could posit that a shopping mall, to the extent that they still exist, maybe we should be talking about an Amazon distribution center, but whatever.
Okay. I can
understand how they would say that this is part of our mission, and I think that it would be up to the court, initially at the trial court level, to determine whether that was in fact a true motivation for the shopping mall and a legitimate advancement of the university's interests. And if the answer to that is yes, then I think it would be subject to the exemption. And if there is some negative impact on competitive private industries, I think that that's a call that the legislature has made. And it's no different than the impact that the dormitory has on the guy with the apartment building two blocks off campus.
Isn't that kind of searching inquiry exactly what the tax court did here? And don't we owe, as appellate reviewing bodies, great deference to the tax court's analysis?
Well, I frankly, that's probably a little bit better of a question for Mr. Wolf than for me, because we come at this thing from a little bit of a different angle. But
you agree that the tax court did do an analysis of purpose and connection
to the
university here.
I think they did, but again, this is not a shopping mall case. This is not the $600 sushi restaurant that a student never entered into. So I think that as I understand it, this case was decided below on summary judgment, and so I'm not sure that the kind of searching inquiry that we're talking about was actually performed.
There's a 39-page detailed opinion.
Understood, Your Honor, but I do think that the facts of this case are clearly not the facts of the analogies and the hypotheticals that Your Honors have been throwing at us in this argument. So I guess the two things I would say are, one, we would like to take it back to 3.3 because that's really our, the reason we're in this case is that we truly do believe that the semicolon has meaning and that it should be given its deference. And beyond that, that even though this case involves a private operating entity in the space that's being under being considered, there are lots of cases out there where you have the university that owns the property and operates the property and still gets subject to these exemption challenges. And
can I stop you there? Because sure. I really am concerned with that. There are state universities all over the state.
Yes.
And they all own property and they all operate, or they all own property that they lease to or have management services agreement with third party private entities for profit. And this decision is going to have implications for all of them. And as an example, Rowan University in Glassboro, Gloucester County, you guys ever heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Has built new dormitories and a number of stores and restaurants and other third-party private entities that are exactly on that footing.
Mm-hmm.
You deal with these state universities. You're kind of here as amicus on behalf of all of them.
Right.
Are those the kind of properties that are currently the leased to Jersey Mike's Hoagie Shop or whoever, or Starbucks, which was an example given? Are they tax exempt generally, as far as you know?
I believe they are. Yeah. And I think.
And so if we decide, and by the way, do you have any idea whether they are under management services agreements or leases and how they work? Because my concern is we're going to make a decision here, and if we decide it's no longer tax exempt, every state university in New Jersey is going to now be assessed, or they probably, if it's a leasehold, but somebody's going to be assessed real estate taxes, which will then endanger the viability of those entities that clearly affect students attending Rowan University to live in nicer dorms and be able to use all those places. That is my concern. I guess that's why you rely on the semicolon, and that's what, is it going to have implications? Are there other similar tax-exempt third-party for-profit entities that are operating food restaurants not related to the university? Although they probably may, go ahead.
I think the answer to that is yes. I think that if the court goes in the direction that Union Township is arguing here, it is potentially a very, very slippery slope for universities. You know, if they build a dormitory that's a really nice dormitory instead of, you know, cinder block walls and IKEA furniture, is that somehow, because it's nice, not within the university?
I'm worried more about the Starbucks on the first floor.
And the Starbucks, I think, Your Honor, it's going to be the same kind of analysis that we've engaged in this discussion here today.
Haven't the decisions dealing with entities like Starbucks and McDonald's already run through the court system? And those have all been cleared as incidental amenities that are provided to places like a college where there need to be housing arrangements for students and affordable eating establishments?
I mean, I don't...
I think you're overstating a little bit to suggest that this whole area of law is going to be overturned.
No, I was referring to...
I asked the question.
Yeah.
You didn't suggest it. I apologize.
Yes. But you're answering yes to the question.
To the question that I think that if you're dealing with a Starbucks or a Jersey Mike's,
Think those decisions are at risk?
I think it's the same analysis that you go through with a steakhouse or a sushi restaurant, and it's really a question of kind, not degree. So in other words, it's very easy for a court to find that a Jersey Mike's is for the benefit of students and therefore part of the student's mission. Maybe a tougher call, we don't think so, but obviously some of you may, that a high-end steakhouse, it is a tougher call. I'm not as concerned about the And I'll go back to the point I made initially, which is that putting aside the private lessee/management operator agreement, we're concerned also about the property that is owned and operated by the state. And again, it's our position under 3.3 that if the property is owned and operated by the state, that is tax exempt, period.
Are they mainly leases?
I'm sorry?
The out there in the campuses of the universities that you're representing, are the Starbucks and the Jersey Mike's types of restaurants mainly there on a lease?
I think, Your Honor, there's probably as many different answers to that question as there are restaurants. I mean, some are leases, some are operating agreements. I don't know that there's a one-size-fits-all in that. So I can't really answer that question.
I think we have your position.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Renaud, rebuttal? Brief rebuttal?
Yes, thank you.
I think that what we have found this morning is that 3.3, the answer on 3.3 really doesn't matter. And I think that both Gourmet and Amicus have agreed with that, because it seems to be conceded that notwithstanding whatever 3.3 says, that a public purpose requirement is imported in either by 2.3 or by 1.10. And so the discussion that we thought that we were having, that seemed to be a debate in this case, it may make a difference in some other case, but it doesn't make any difference in this case. Now, so a couple of things. The Todd Shipyard case and the Munaki case were decided in 1965 and 1962, respectively. I believe that Mr. Wolf indicated that those were decided under 1.10. That is not correct. That statute, 1.10, was enacted in 1984. And the purpose of the statute, as stated in numerous cases, as well as in the statute itself, was to correct many of these issues and decisions that had previously been made. And the language of it is important. And we stopped when Mr. Wolf was asked the question, we stopped reading. So what the statute says is when real property which is exempt from taxation is used by a private party in connection with an activity conducted for profit, and the use does not render the real property taxable, and this is where we have to continue, pursuant to Section 1 of Public Laws of 1949, Chapter 177, which is, guess what? 54.423. So it's not, you don't stop with does not render the property taxable. It's taxable pursuant to the Leasehold Taxing Act or otherwise. So in this case, this is the statute that we rely on most strongly, because it absolutely fits this situation. It's real property exempt from taxation, used by a private party in connection with an activity conducted for profit. Do we hit all of those notes? Yes, we do. It's conducted for profit by Gourmet, and it's an activity conducted for profit, and it doesn't render the real property taxable. Why not? Because we'll accept Amicus's argument, because it's property of the state that's exempt, so it doesn't render it to be taxable, and therefore it falls 100% under that statute. Just in terms of
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
In response to the Amici argument, why wouldn't your position endanger all of those Starbucks and Jersey Mike's all over our public campuses?
I can only say this. I don't know what the arrangements are with all of them. Are the union's point in this case, with respect to these facts and this particular restaurant, was that this restaurant, other than the fact, if we moved it, there is no difference in having this restaurant on campus or next door off campus, that the only connection that this restaurant has with the campus is that it's on campus. So for example, the reason is because it was not in any meal plan. It said specifically, and this was in the record, on the website,
That's not true. They give a percentage of their profit to the university. They're involved in other activities and contributions. They talk about the composting, the supplying of foodstuffs, jobs for students, attract students to get. I mean, they clearly have a connection to the university beyond that, which the property next door where, what was the fancy restaurant Justice Alvin mentioned?
Wolfgang's.
It's clearly got a bigger, greater connection than that. That's not true.
Well, but the property next door is going to pay rent to whoever owns that property, and we submit that this is nothing. This payment is nothing more really than rent.
They're not. Well, okay, that's a different argument. You're saying it's a lease.
Yes, well, okay. It's a lease or whatever. Okay. It's a concession. It's a license. It's whatever. Whatever comes under 1.10. So in other words, if the property was on the property next door, they'd pay that owner. If the restaurant is on Kane, they pay Kane.
No, but they pay Kane and do other things with Kane beyond anything the restaurant next door would do.
Well, let's take the composting and the use of the produce. That example, for example, was pointed out by Judge Novin in his tax court decision, where he said that they brought that up later on. That's not anywhere in the management agreement. It doesn't say any place we have to that gourmet dining has to take produce from the university,
or that it has to spring. It's in the record, and it's one of our considerations in the overall picture. And so I don't care whether it's in the management agreement or not. From my perspective, sitting up here, it's still a consideration, don't you agree?
I would not agree that it's a consideration, but not sufficient. Okay. In other words, I don't think that you can take four things, which is what the appellate division did, that are not sufficient to make something tax exempt, and then roll them together, and now it's tax exempt. So if that makes sense,
I get your argument.
I don't believe that if you take four things that are not exempt and roll them together, that it makes them exempt. And I would also say that it was stated that the tax court overlooked the reasons that the university gave. The tax court did not overlook the reasons. The tax court took each and every reason and considered it and gave an analysis and then indicated why it rejected that. And I think that at some point, unless this is going to be a I know it when I see it type of thing, that I think that the idea of giving some deference to the tax court judge who spent a lot of time on this case and gave it consideration, even though it's a legal issue, even though it was on summary judgment, you have special rules for the tax court. You defer more on valuation issues to the tax court than you do to findings of other trial judges. You might consider in this case to give some deference to the tax court judge who, as was pointed out, spent a 39-page opinion reviewing all of this carefully. Just the Stoddard case, that was obviously student housing. The fact that it involved families didn't mean that it wasn't for a public purpose that carried out what the purpose of the university was. And the New Jersey Carpenters case states specifically that tax exemptions are to be strictly construed, while they are to be liberally construed as to property of the state. That doesn't apply in this case. We submit under 1.10. We are not taxing the property of the state. We have assessed the interest of a profit-making company, and we submit that that is proper in this case. I think I've hit all the items that I wanted to hit on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to thank all counsel. Very, very fine advocacy in this case. We appreciate it.
Can I add one thing to the record, Justice? I promise to be less than 10 seconds.
Yeah. In the form of sir rebuttal?
Sir rebuttal.
Which we don't have.
Sir rebuttal.
You have to come to the center.
Justice, might be heard briefly on sir rebuttal on a relevant topic that was inquired on.
10 seconds. Go for it.
This is your top 8.
8 seconds. Currently, Union Township has appeals to invalidate the exemption on the bookstore, the entire campus, specifically the Starbucks, and many other portions of the campus.
Thank you. Okay. Is there anything you want to add in response? You have to come to the center if you do. You get the last word here.
Yes. The issues in this case are the issues in this case. I've been very careful, you probably have noted, to restrict my comments to what the facts of this case are and the specific years in question, because they change. Circumstances change, and we're not here to argue all of the issues that counsel would all of a sudden Understood. Wanted to bring in on sub rebuttal, which Understood. I would submit is questionable. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.